First, we face a lot of big choices in our lives. Get married or not, and to whom? Have kids? Move to a strange new place for a job? Start a new radio show? Change a business strategy? These can all be tough choices. There are a lot of variables, and it's hard to predict the outcomes when we make a big change like that. Our next guest has some good news. He says there are strategies and ways of thinking that can help us weigh the options and make better decisions. Stephen Johnson is the host of the PBS series How We Got to Now and the podcast American Innovations. He is the author of 11 books, including his latest, Farsighted, How We Make the Decisions That Matter the Most. Stephen, thanks for joining us today. Oh, we've lost Stephen. He was on his way into a studio, I think. You can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. Have you made a big decision like this in your life? How did you weigh the different options? Be interested in hearing your story. Did you make a list of pros and cons? Did you end up ignoring that list, or did it work for you? What kind of strategies do you use when you make a big decision in your life, whether to move, get married, have kids, make a big change of any sort like that? Tell us your story at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Hypothetically, we'll have our guest on in just a moment. Let's see. It looks like we may have him in the studio now. Stephen, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, good. So we're not just talking about decisions here, like about what to have for lunch, you know, the little stuff, which cereal to buy. You're looking at big life-changing decisions that are going to shape our lives for years to come. What's the difference in our brains and in the ways we think between those kinds of decisions?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's been a lot written over the last 10, 15 years ago about our kind of instinctive brain and the kinds of decisions that we make in you know, kind of a flash judgment, our gut decisions and things like that. And those, it's fascinating, the research on that, the brain science on that is fascinating. But I think if we look back on our lives and we think about the decisions that we make that really end up changing things for us, like the choices you were just talking about, should I take a new job? Or if it's a business decision, should I launch a new product in a completely new market? Those are the decisions that really end up shaping, you know, the course of our careers or of our lives. And so I wanted with this book to go and look at what we understood about those decisions in terms of the science, really. Like, what do we know about how to make them, and can we actually get better? Can we teach people to get better at them?
And you look at a huge range of decisions, from Charles Darwin deciding whether or not to get married to the Obama administration deciding whether to go ahead with the attack that ultimately killed Osama bin Laden, took lessons out of those things. I want to start with that Darwin example. This is something a lot of people might have done. He did the traditional pro on one side of the list, con on the other. Is that a good strategy for us to use?
Yeah, the book kind of starts with that story because it's so funny. It's like right in the middle of Darwin, you know, coming up with the theory of natural selection in 1838. In his scientific notebooks, he devotes two kind of facing pages to a pros and cons list. He calls it kind of not marry and marry, and he writes down all the different options. It's very funny. I kind of reproduce the list in the book. It's very funny to read now. It's a little dated. But one of the reasons I started with that is that's the one technique that most people do learn, right? The mm-hmm. pros and cons list. And so in a way, it's been, you know, if Darwin was doing it almost 200 years ago, we really haven't advanced a lot. And in fact, there are a lot of other techniques. And part of the problem with the pros and cons list is, by definition, you're looking at one alternative, right? Like, should I do this or not? And sometimes, you know, we call it a whether or not decision. And there's a lot of research that shows that there's a guy named Paul Nutt who's done a number of different studies of decisions in a kind of a business context. And he looked at the way people made their decisions. Did they have a process? And one of the things he found is that it was very unusual for people to have a stage in the decision-making process where they actually took out time to try and come up with other alternatives, right? They were just looking at, again, at a whether or not decision. Should I do this or not? And in fact, those decisions, without that stage of exploring other alternatives, ended up being, you know, only 29, 30% of them were ultimately considered to be a success. But if people took time at the beginning, this is what I call in Farsighted, the mapping stage of a decision process. If they took time to actually explore other alternatives, come up with other potential paths they might take, they were more likely than not to be happy with the outcome.
So we limit ourselves if we think of most of these decisions as yes or no, A or B. If we don't step back and say, are these really the only two alternatives?
You know, in a sense, there's a kind of macro way of describing what I'm arguing for in the book, which is that whenever you face one of these truly complex choices, I call them full spectrum decisions, like they just involve all these different elements, in one choice. What we want to do is go through these exercises that challenge our assumptions, that challenge our initial assessment of the situation, expand all our alternatives, because it's in the nature of these things to be so complex that we can't perceive them all. And we go into them with the kind of too much confidence, too much assumption that we understand the situation. So you want to, at least initially, in a sense, you want to be, people always talk about wanting to be decisive. But actually, in a way, what you want to do at the beginning is hold that decisiveness in check for a while you work through all the potential options on the table.
I want to talk about this in two different settings, a group and then an individual. Looking at a group setting, you say that one way to help consider those different options and maybe punch a hole in that initial what seems like a good decision, but you haven't thought it through, is to have a diverse group of decision makers. Why is that?
You know, this is one of the recurring findings in group psychology and behavioral economics and behavioral psychology over the last 20 years or so, that diverse groups make more creative, more insightful, come up with more creative and insightful solutions to problems. And that diversity can be measured in a lot of different ways. There's gender diversity, there's, you know, ethnic diversity, but there's also diversity of expertise, intellectual background, profession. When you put a group of people together in a room who all think in similar ways and who all have the same background and the same kind of cognitive styles, they end up falling prey to all of the problems of kind of groupthink and overconfidence and confirmation bias and so on. They come to an agreement too quickly. And that can make for a socially comfortable atmosphere, but it doesn't always lead to the best decisions. You need those different perspectives to propose new alternatives or to suggest, you know, these flaws in the decision you're looking at that you might not otherwise see from the vantage point that you're taking. So diversifying the people around you is one of the key steps that you want to take in making a choice like this.
So that's great for a group or a team decision. Now, what if this is a decision that's just me making it? I can't be that diverse. I'm just one person. How can I take advantage of that idea of different viewpoints in one human brain?
Well, yes, right. You want to just have one brain in there. You don't want to have multiple brains
Exactly. Inside
the same skull. So the part of this is there's kind of a second phase that I talk about in the book, which is the predicting phase, right? And almost every complex long-term decision is a decision that involves some level of prediction, right? You're choosing this because you think in 6 months or a year or 5 years that this outcome will be better. But that's a prediction, and humans, as we know, are very bad at prediction, particularly with complex kind of long-term situations. So part of the work here, if you're just making the decision on your own, is to force yourself to, in a sense, make multiple predictions. It's really almost a storytelling exercise, right? So when you're looking at a choice in your life, you're trying to decide whether to take this new job, and you've gotten all excited about it, and you think, well, this is going to be great, and you've implicitly told yourself a story about the future. You're like, this is going to be so great. I'm going to be so happy. The people are going to be fantastic. The pay is going to be good. All the things that you're excited about. At that stage, right as you're about to kind of pull the trigger on that decision, one technique that you can use is, well, it's this technique developed by this psychologist named Gary Klein, and it's called a pre-mortem. And a pre-mortem is basically where you force yourself to tell the story of the choice you're about to make that you're so excited about. Only this story, in 5 years, it turns out to be a catastrophe. And your job is to tell the story of how it went wrong. And there's kind of interesting psychological research in this that apparently if you just ask people, do you see any flaws with this particular choice? They'll say, no, it looks great. It's fantastic. I'm so excited. But if you force them to actually tell the kind of negative, worst case scenario kind of story, they do perceive flaws that they wouldn't otherwise see. They might still end up making the choice, but they're more, they in a sense, have diversified their perspective, you know, by themselves, by forcing themselves to tell this kind of negative outcome story.
Talking to Stephen Johnson, his new book is Farsighted, How We Make the Decisions That Matter the Most. Well, speaking of storytelling, Stephen, one of your pieces of advice is read more novels, and that's going to help us be better decision makers. Do I have that right?
Yeah, well, it's funny. You know, there's a lot of science in this book, a lot of different kinds of science. There's a lot of neuroscience, there's a lot of psychology, and so on. But one of the things I really wrestled with is, you know, every complex choice like this is unique, right? That's what makes it so challenging. You know, it's a unique constellation of forces that come together in your life that will never be exactly repeated in anybody else's life. And so the question is, you know, how can we get better at these kinds of choices? Because each one is kind of singular. It's a snowflake. It's a fingerprint, right? It's never to be repeated. So what are the universal lessons, right, that we can apply to these unique situations? And I think what science can teach us is, you know, these are the things that we've learned about how to see these situations with more clarity and how to expose ourselves to new perspectives on them. But literature also, I think, gives us something else. So I talk a lot in the book about Middlemarch, you know, the great 19th century novel, George Eliot's kind of masterpiece. And there are a number of decisions in that book that the characters make. And Eliot, as a novelist, has this extraordinary ability to show us the decision in all of its complexity and show us this kind of interior vista into the deciding mind at work trying to wrestle with a choice like that. And I believe, and I think there's some research to back this up, that that's one of the great gifts of literature, is that we get to watch these kind of parallel lives running and see that kind of interior landscape. And by watching somebody else make a choice like that and watching multiple people in multiple novels make choices like that, it's in a sense kind of practice. It's a rehearsal for the kinds of choices that we make in the real world.
So is decision-making, and again, this big-picture decision-making, not the, you know, spur-of-the-moment type stuff, is decision-making a skill that we as individuals can get better at over time?
I do believe so. And in fact, the more I have researched this, and I've been working on this book on and off for 8 years now, appropriately enough for a book about long-term thinking, I think that complex decision-making should be a required course in every high school. Because, one, I believe there is a lot of material out there now that we can use and that it can be taught. It is a skill that we can improve. You know, we'll never get to perfection with it, but we can get better at it. And if you think of all the things you learned in high school that you don't use anymore, you know, that you never really used after you took the test, that decision-making would be an actual skill that would be useful to you no matter what you did with your career, with your life, that being able to make complex decisions more skillfully would be something that you would use, you know, for the rest of your life at those important moments. And along the way in such a class, you would read novels and you would talk about the utilitarian philosophers and you would talk about neuroscience and cognitive psychology and you would learn a whole range of different interesting fields, but it would all be in the service of a skill that would be applicable you know, in your adult life going forward.
Now, something I'm really good at is postponing decisions. Uh-huh. Is there a point, even if we go through this whole process and we're just on the fence, is there a way to overcome indecision?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't talk about that nearly as much in the book as I probably should have, because it's come up in the book tour a couple of times. So much of what I'm talking about is being deliberative with your decisions. And you're right, there are people who are too deliberative, right?
You mentioned Hamlet in the book at one point.
Yeah, I think that the way to think about it is, as I've kind of alluded to, in the book, I divide it up into these three phases that you want to go through. You want to have a process, and there's a mapping phase and a predicting phase and then a deciding phase. And in the book, I talk about techniques to use in each of those phases. I think that for people who tend to be too instinctual and going with their gut, the phases can help you slow down. For people who tend to be too indecisive, I think the phases can actually be useful as well in the sense that you define a period and say, okay, I'm going to spend 1 week on mapping, 1 week on predicting, and 1 week on deciding, and then I'll pull the trigger. And that will give you a little bit more kind of clarity and kind of closure to the process that you might not otherwise have.
And can you talk to us about dealing with those, you referenced Donald Rumsfeld, the known unknowns. Like, before you have kids, you don't know what life with having kids is like. Before you move from the East to the West Coast, as you tried, you talk about in the book, you don't know really what it's like day to day to live there. How do you try to factor in those things that you just can't know until you take the plunge?
Yeah, I mean, that's one place where diversity really helps, like just talking to different people who will point out things that just had never occurred to you. There's a great quote in the book from Thomas Schelling, the Nobel laureate, who says, the one thing you can never do, no matter how brilliant you are, is write up a list of things that would never occur to you. and in a sense, by diversifying the pool of people around you, giving you advice, that offers you an opportunity to kind of see those, you know, known unknowns, or even the unknown unknowns, which are the scarier variation. But also the storytelling, too. I mean, there's a technique that's related to the premortem we just talked about called scenario planning. And that's where you try and tell multiple stories about the outcome you're kind of thinking about. And one of the directives in that, one of the exercises is you tell three stories for the decision you're looking at. One where things go really well, one where things go really poorly, and one where things get really weird. and that exercise of trying to imagine what that weird scenario would be, that is one way to kind of trick your mind into seeing some of those known unknowns, or anticipating some of the things that you might not have otherwise anticipated.
I'll start trying to think of those weird scenarios. Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation.
Stephen Johnson is the author of the new book, Farsighted: How We Make the Decisions That Matter the Most. He joined us with some tips and strategies to help make those decisions. And there's still time for you to share your experiences along those lines. Let us know over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us about a big decision you've made or you are making and how you weighed it. Did you reach out to other people as your brain trust to get different perspectives? Did you make that pro and con list that Charles Darwin did before he got married? Let us know on the Ideas Network Facebook page.